This is the Scottish Football Marketing Podcast, a Scottish FA podcast that hopes to help clubs at all levels of the game in Scotland with marketing advice, tips and insight. Montrose are a League One club that seem to be doing a lot of great stuff on and off the pitch. So we thought it would be a good idea to get John Crawford, club chairman, and Peter Davidson, chief executive of the Montrose Community Trust, on to find out more. Enjoy the show.
Hello and welcome to the Scottish Football Marketing Podcast. Hopefully you enjoyed our last podcast with Hearts' Chief Executive Andrew McKinley, as we've got a similar episode lined up today. Before I bring in our guests, I'm Chris Sampson and I'm joined as ever by Michael Bockle. Hello, Michael.
Hello, Chris.
You all right? How are you getting on?
Good. Just plugging away.
Yeah, definitely. Same here. Today's podcast is all about Montrose, and we've got two of the directors on with us today. They are Peter Davidson and John Crawford. Hello, gents. How are you both today?
Both fine, thank you.
Hi.
Thanks for joining us. We will just get cracked in, and I'll let you both introduce yourselves. John, why don't you go first?
Okay, I'm John Crawford. I'm current chairman of Montrose FC. I've been a fan, a director, and I'm now honoured and privileged to head up the current board at Links Park. I've been chairman now for 4.5 years.
And Peter, what about yourself?
Certainly, thank you. So I am the chief executive of Montrose Community Trust, which is a charitable arm of Montrose Football Club. And in November 2016, I accepted an invitation from John to become a director at the football club too. So I assume that role also. I've been living back in town now for 3 years, having lived and worked elsewhere for 15 years. But family and I are delighted to be back at a place and club that I call home.
And for those maybe not fully familiar with the club, can you tell us a bit about Montrose and what the club's all about?
Yeah, we are a part-time professional club, currently playing in the third tier of Scottish football. Having spent previously a number of years in the bottom tier, we are now pleased to have established ourselves in Division 1. We are probably and famously, I suppose, for being the first team to be involved in the initial dreaded playoff, which we thankfully survived. Having said that, on a more positive note, 2 seasons later, we're celebrating winning that league and gaining promotion.
Yes, I suppose I would just add that the club have always been a community club, but I think in recent years we've kicked this on quite a bit. You know, all the company directors were and are fans of the club, and they live and most work in and around the town too. So there's a real understanding of the impact that football can have on the community, not only on field, but also through an off-field activity too.
And obviously a lot of sort of what's done is through the community trust. Can you give us a bit more detail about that and how that actually fits in with the club?
Sure. So the Montrose Community Trust, which actually was originally known as the Links Park Community Trust, was founded in 2011. And we launched our activities in April 2012. There's a growing realisation and understanding in this country, and I've heard this on a number of your podcasts, that football has a unique ability to reach and engage and positively influence lives and communities, and that's certainly proved to be the case here in Montrose. The charity typically engages with over 1,000 distinct participants each and every week, tackling some of the key inequalities that affect the lives of those probably most disadvantaged in our town. So whether that's due to poverty, unemployment, mental health, disability, dementia, and or social isolation, to name just a few areas of our work. But I think it's important at this point to mention the charity is independent, legally, financially, and operationally from the football club. We've got our own board of trustees and workforce, but clearly work hand in hand with the club. Both organisations have representation on each other's board, which just fosters the relationship further.
Yeah. Can I just add there, for being honest, the trust work well with over 1,000 people each and every week. I believe that number regularly reaches 1,400 people. So an age of 18 months old, people in their 90s. We only have a local population of 11,000. So those numbers clearly show the reach and impact of their work, which as a club, we're only too delighted to support.
I think looking in from the outside, Montrose as a club appear to be a very well-run club and a club that has, as you guys have already alluded to, the fans and the community at the heart of everything that you do. What's the decision-making process like at the club for launching any new activities that want to try and engage with the fans or the community?
Yeah, I think it's twofold. I mean, we have a board of the club and we have a board of the charity. In relation to activities, in terms of charitable community benefiting activities, the majority of these will have been proposed by staff at Montrose Community Trust. We tend to ensure that All of our activities have a purpose and are designed in such a way to address a local identified need. So this planning process is done with partner agencies in community sport, education and training, health and wellbeing. For example, in the weeks and months ahead, we'd like to launch a range of employability programmes in association with the Department of Conventions in an attempt to support the many that have been affected by the global pandemic and the impact on jobs. So the club will have a role to play in supporting these initiatives, not just through the provision of facilities, because the stadium provides a, as you'll know, an attractive alternative classroom to the type seen in many statutory bodies, but also by providing opportunities for participants to benefit from meaningful work experience behind the scenes too.
Yeah, everyone associated with the Rose FC is committed to supporting the work of MCT, as we know that in doing so, we're assisting an individual or family in need, as everything the charity does in association with the club is designed to improve the lives of those living in that town.
Yeah, and I suppose it's an interesting thing. It's one of the things that obviously Danny Bisland, who the Scottish FA club grow manager, who was kind enough to help set up this podcast for us, you know, he's spoken a lot. When we did a community podcast, for example, he spoke about that links with local schools, funny enough, that you mentioned there. Is, you know, how does the club approach that sort of thing? So if you're talking about the sort of learning initiatives, is it community trust led, or is it something that you know, the schools and local authorities approach you?
So we as a charity look to embed ourselves in the community and meet local need, and clearly one of the biggest needs is supporting attainment and achievement in education. So that's community trust led, but all initiatives are developed in partnership with local schools. And obviously the club play a big part in that, because we're a charity based at the club. The club opened their doors to us, and as I think I just touched on previously, it provides a really unique and alternative and appealing place of education as opposed to the four walls of the classroom.
And for those, maybe then, what sort of things to happen at Lynx Park with the schools is from an education point of view?
Well, the charity, we've got three strands of work. The community trust. So we've got community sport, education and training, and health and wellbeing. The education strand that you ask about seeks to support children and young people develop skills for life learning and work. But as we all know, the traditional four walls of that classroom doesn't work for everyone. In the context of football, there's the ability to reach, engage, and enthuse many. I certainly would have been in that bracket when I was at school too. So schools come to Lynx Park Stadium, they participate in age and stage appropriate projects such as our Lynx Park Health Trail, Numeracy Trail, Literacy Trail and Science Trail. And that will involve a group of children exploring the stadium, the various roles that exist within, and they themselves undertake a range of fun yet challenging educational activities that are designed to support their needs. So take the Literacy Trail for example, we'd ask pupils to participate in a mock press conference, taking on the role of a new signing or a reporter, asking and or responding to open questions, just like they would have to do later in life at a job interview. And the Numeracy Trail might do things like asking them to take on the role of the groundsman and with a trundle wheel in hand, measuring the length and width and the volume of the football pitch, for example. So led by us, the charity, developed and delivered in partnership with local schools, so that it's age and stage appropriate, done in partnership with the club because they provide the brand and the appeal, which enthuses kids to learn.
Can I just add there, though, that the trust and the club do work very closely together, because care in the community is so important. That is evident when you see the smiles on the kids' faces that they are enjoying the activities put on. But they are also benefiting learning at the same time, as Peter rightly says, just more than a club. Peter and his team at the Trust do a fantastic job at Lynx Park.
It definitely sounds like that. I think that's evident. Again, talk about looking in from the outside, but, and I said, even internally, within the Scottish FA, I hear that a lot as well. We've gone back to the club then a little bit in terms of just those links. I mean, you talk about links with the community, but there seems to be quite a strong bond with the fans, again, or so it seems from the outside. And one of my favourite things I saw in the last couple of years was when fans got to come down to Lynx Park to try out a selection of pies, picking the best to be sold during the season. I thought it was just such a simple thing, but a great way of engaging sort of local businesses and everything that went with that. What sort of other activities have you had fans involved with like that?
I think going back to the Pioneers, I just think we're very fortunate to be supported by local businesses and have a number who can supply the same goods. What better way than to ask the fans to sample and select their preferences? Though that was a brainchild of our operation manager at the time. But they've also been involved as supporters with regards to the current home strip and a poll to choose their favourite. They believe this was the correct option, as it was, after all, their hard-earned money that goes to purchasing the replica itself. So it was important to us that this was done.
Yeah, if I can add, as John has said, there's probably a number of initiatives, both delivered and planned for the future, that puts the fans at the heart of its design and purpose, and that's only right. An initiative that we as a charity have been allowed to run on behalf of the club is, we've recently launched an association with the European Football for Development Network, and our local health and social care partnership is the Healthy Football League app. Now, all of our fans have been encouraged to download the free app to their phone, which then records their physical activity levels via their sit count app. Now, their results then do a score for both themselves and Montrose FC, and this affects our standing in both national and European league tables. So Montrose are currently top of the National League, with a comfortable lead over Motherwell is second place. But what's really interesting, is quite a quirky tool, is that we're currently third on the international table for our activity levels, behind Sparta Praha, who are from Prague, and FC Schalke. And our director, Barry O'Neill, is in the international top 10 for his player score for the step count. So, you know, initiatives like this allow the club to positively engage with their fans, but it also allows us as a charity to support locals who are becoming healthier and more active by using their, let's say, their competitive spirit, but also the desire to see Montrose do well on any league table.
Yeah, I love that. I think it's great. And I think it was actually something that somebody was mentioning to me on Twitter the other day about more clubs should try and get involved in that. And we'll maybe try and find the link to that to see if other clubs in Scotland can get involved. Because I think that would be really beneficial. And it'd be great to see yourselves up in that top of the international table as well, challenging for European honours. That would be excellent. Yeah, definitely. Like many clubs throughout Scotland, Montrose have volunteers that help with different aspects of the club. Can you give us more of an insight into how many there is at the club and how they've got involved with the club?
Happily, all clubs, no matter the size, rely very much on volunteers. We have a great number of Montrose. For example, all our youth development coaches, our assistant kit man, our child protection officer, our assistant, lottery program of 50-50 sellers on match days, as well as organisers who ensure the bar and Dunstall staff and ball boys are in attendance. And just recently, two new volunteers have been added to our existing media team. Hope I'm not missing anyone out there, but every one of them do a fantastic job, and be assured the commitment to the club is very much appreciated. Peter, do you want to add a bit to that?
Yeah, I think, we're a really well-resourced part-time club. We couldn't fulfil our operations to the level that we currently do without them. I mean, John's touched on the number of roles that are fulfilled by volunteers at the club, but we at the charity also benefit from an extensive network of volunteers who assist with our work. I mean, for example, we've got walk leaders, a dozen or so walk leaders who assist older, inactive, socially isolated adults in maintaining their activity levels. And we've got both men and women who, this is by far my favourite programme, help with the delivery of our football memories reminiscence sessions, which take place at the football stadium in the dressing room with all the strips hanging up and the Bovril and the liniment oil and all other things. And we can't, of course, forget the many volunteers who give up their evenings and weekends, not just in Montrose, but length and breadth of the country, who support our young and adult grassroots teams. And in the last count, I think we had 114 volunteers fulfilling a range of management, coaching, administrative and fundraising roles. And I, for calculation, but if all of these volunteers were paid the national living wage, I think it would cost something in the region of £250,000 annually. So we couldn't function at the level we do without them. I'm extremely grateful that they just wish to be part of our football family.
One of the things I'm always interested in when it comes to volunteers in football clubs is how you approach embedding those volunteers into the Montrose way of doing things, in inverted commas. Is there anything that you do to that, or are they left to kind of, do you trust them to operate under kind of circumstances that the club expects them to?
There's no Montrose way as such. However, we do want to surround ourselves with personnel who are positive and optimistic and buy into the club, which currently is heading in the right direction. Listen, we've done the sterling work of the directors, the management team, the players, everyone connected with the club, as they all have important roles to play in driving the whole and to meet our ambitions.
I'm delighted that you both know a little bit about the work of Montrose Community Trust. We've actually been the work of MCT is still one of the best kept secrets in the church. I think there's a perception amongst many that all we offer, as most community departments do in Scotland, is offer community football, in addition to the other programmes. So we've started using the slogan more than football to reflect the very nature of our work. And Montrose FC have fast become known, however, as hashtag more than a club, because top down from the chairman right down to that volunteers and everyone in between, we're committed to using the sport of football in general, and specifically the people of our club locally, to assist people in their daily lives. So the positivity that's been instilled and shown from all the club assists greatly with this.
I think, Michael and I's kind of running theme of this podcast seems to be from the outside looking in, but it definitely looks as though you've embraced social media and enabled some of the volunteers running that side of the club to have the freedom to promote the club. Can you talk us through any of the benefits you've seen from that? Because there's been some big hits in terms of videos and views and things like that. Can you talk us through some of that?
Yeah, these videos are entertaining me as much as everyone else. I mean, social media plays a huge part in the lives of many, I suppose, particularly during times like this when we're at home more often than not, and we have time to kind of scour the net for these things. So these platforms provide a fantastic opportunity for us to engage with, and more importantly, entertain our fans and followers that are missing being able to visit Lynx Park. So yeah, listen, we're fortunate, therefore, to have a fantastic team of volunteers that just seem to be so creative and have the technical ability to create some quite unique, interesting, entertaining, funny, but of late, some emotive content too.
Yeah, I just add myself and the board, they're very pleased with what our media team are producing this time. They bring a positivity and a newness to the club, and reaching out not just for our own fans, but further afield, which is fantastic. Some of the recent view numbers, as you said, have been unbelievable. So we thank them for this and can assure that their work is very much valued and appreciated.
How does the club look at recruiting volunteers? Do you regularly put out calls to arms, or is it you sort of rely on people approaching the club?
I think it's a bit of both. You know, if we have a particular role we need to fill, so we've been in a situation in the past where we're looking for someone to fulfil the role of our mascot, for example. It's not for everyone, but we've got a volunteer who's more than happy to wear the costume and do the rounds across town. And likewise, we'll be approached. So in actual fact, our young volunteer, who's producing most of the content for our Twitter page, approached the club and offered his services. And I think that was just at the time that we signed Martin Rennie. And the Martin Rennie new signing reveal video, I think, reached well in excess of six figures in terms of views on Twitter. So there's great talent out there. We're always happy to take a call or an email from anyone who feels that they can come in and add value to what we do.
Chris, are you wanting to plug your interview with Ewan at this moment?
I was going to wait until the end, but yeah, I'll come in here. I recently had a quick chat with Ewan Lowney, who is one of Montrose's volunteers and helps on the social side. I think the Martin Rennie video reveal that you mentioned there was some of his work. And yeah, I think it's 200,000 views now on Twitter. Which is just insane, really. There's been plenty since. I think one of the things that jumped to me was the stuff around Harry Cochrane's loan in January being renewed, which was, I think it kind of baffled me rather than entertained me, which I suppose is could be both, really. But yeah, as you said as well, John, some of the emotive stuff recently has been absolutely superb. I think long may it continue, because I'm definitely really enjoying following it and watching it.
From obviously we're living in a period where COVID-19 and everything that comes with that. How much has COVID-19 impacted the club with a financial aspect and partners?
This has obviously had an impact not just on us but every club due to normal sources of income being removed overnight, resulting obviously in no gate money, corporate hospitality, pitch and facility hires, etc., as well as preventing us some of our annual events activities. But not only have we been affected, but our commercial partners, such as the suppliers of goods and goods, have lost out as well. The local pubs and hotels and match days, etc., it goes on. But I must add that having a prudent board and a management team over the last few years, plus having the understanding of the situation from the players and the management and fans throughout, plus the Jim Anderson and the government grants, as well as the other scheme, things could have been a lot worse than what they actually are.
Yeah, I think John makes an excellent point. You know, football clubs across the country have struggled during these times, but football is such a strong contributor to any local community and any local economy that the impact our shutdown has had on many in our town is quite significant. So we do recognise that, we feel for them and look forward to working with and supporting these local businesses once again when the coast clears, and just hope that we can all come through these troubling times.
Well, I know you've got things like your Club 500, and when we've spoke to clubs on the podcast before, where some of the stuff that listeners have always sort of been interested to hear more of is just examples of some other sort of fundraising initiatives that the clubs have been up to. Is there anything that you guys can share with us that the club's been doing, particularly in the last sort of 12 months?
Well, you mentioned our Club 500, so that's by far our biggest fundraising activity. So for anyone who's a fan listening who is looking for a way in which to support the local club, this particular initiative is a monthly draw, payable by direct debit. It ends with a £500 and £100 prize, with these prizes doubled for the festive draw. But this initiative also rewards participants with a share in the club. However, so win or lose, fans become a shareholder of the local club and assist our efforts both hold on and off the pitch. You mentioned the 12 months, you know, we normally have an annual dinner, and over the last couple of years with Gordon Strachan being a guest, Graham Soon has been a guest, it's been a real honour for the club and allowed us to support our efforts on and off the pitch. But this again has fell victim to the pandemic. So as John will probably tell you now, though, our fans have supported us greatly through these difficult times.
Yeah, this season we've had a record number of season tickets purchased, and it was a testament to our supporters. They've also fundraised on behalf of the club, or they've just given raise aimed whatever it takes, which raised a substantial amount of money, to which we're very thankful to them for. We have also been well supported from fans viewing the live streaming of games from their comfort of homes, and it goes on. It's just been fantastic.
I think post-COVID then, do you expect to see that interest continue and a greater interest in attending matches from your fans, or is there a fear that the club might have lost a few along the way? What's the current thoughts about that?
I'm expecting and hoping to let them back in good numbers, not necessarily for the financial reasons, but because they've been sorely missed. Yeah, you really just have to ask the players and the management team about that.
Yeah. I think seeing fans back in football grounds will be a true sign of recovery and a sign of normality returning. I mean, I'm particularly keen to see us being able to welcome fans back, as I am all too aware of the particular role that I and we do in the town, of the positive impact that Saturday afternoon on the terraces can have and will have, result permitting, of course, on the ways that those have come to rely on it and dearly like us all miss it.
And Michael asked about kind of that financial side and some of the partners as well. Has it been difficult at all keeping existing sponsors or attracting new ones? How have you found that during this period?
No, we've been very, very fortunate that every one of our sponsors, including our main sponsors, Guinea Fuels, have continued to support us throughout. We've also recently added a new sleeve sponsor. Therefore, we've been very lucky and are very grateful and appreciative of them all. I can't wait to see them all back at Links Park as soon as. I'm sure they're all missing our hospitality. fans, when I look back, will see a number of new advertising boards erected. Again, the continued support for local business has been great. And there's all the supporters that retain, the support has just been fantastic in these difficult times.
One of the things I noticed, I think it was towards the end of last year, you sort of looked to integrate and help support the local women's team. How did that sort of come about, and what were the steps that you've been taking to help support them?
Yeah, I don't think we're too different to some other clubs in this regard. I mean, Montrose Community Trust launched the women's team 4 years ago, purely with the aim of providing a pathway into adult football for the many girls that were playing as part of the successful Montrose Youth Programme. But things developed well and quickly, and the side won their league title in their second year, so they now play like us in the third tier of the game. So the team have aspirations to bring Premiership football to Montrose before the men. So it's appropriate that we support that levels of ambition, but more importantly support that level of professionalism and performance by bringing them under the umbrella of the club, and that will allow us to offer our resources that we provide to the men to the women and assist them in these efforts. And we're really proud of what they're achieving, and we are excited to see what the future holds.
Yeah, we're in total agreement with this, and again, see this as a very innovative and positive move for the club, and look forward to working with them.
And you talked at the very start there about, you know, how you went from that Highland League, Lowland League playoff to winning the league, and then now established in League One and actually challenging as things stand for playoffs, at least from League One into the Championship. What are the long term ambitions for Montrose as a football club on the pitch but also off the pitch?
We support, I'm sure the management team will agree, never look too far ahead of ourselves. But we certainly do have ambitions to strive to take the club as far as we can and to be one of the best part-time clubs. We do not see the Championship being beyond us in the next 2 or 3 years. I'm sure the manager and his team will agree with me there. As for the board, we need to work to and continue to develop the structure to meet the progress and ambition on and off the pitch, and to ensure that we cover all eventualities to the betterment of the club.
Yeah, I'd agree with that. I think we're touching on the community as well here, and I think the majority of our local community would admit to being quite proud of their local club at the minute for their achievements on and off the park. I mean, the league title win a few years back, but also our award from the Scottish FA has been recognised as the best professional club in the community a few years back, probably being the highlights. So my ambition is to not only continue such good work, but extend so that we support as many individuals and families as possible during what will be very difficult months and years ahead.
Yeah, it's definitely been an impressive period on and off the park, as you said. Have you, either of you, got any big learnings that you can share with us that you've had from your time at the club so far?
I think after 25 years, I'll always be learning as a director. I wouldn't have a promote positivity and not listen too much. Listen or hear too much negativity throughout the club. Although as a board, we must listen and act on constructive criticism. A lot has been learned since we were Club 42, and hopefully we can continue to grow and stabilise the club. We have, I believe, created a family unit throughout. I'm enthused and we wish to continue for many years to come.
Yeah, I'd echo that, John. I mean, I undertake a day job at the stadium, but on a match day I can be as animated as anyone. That's the impact and the effect that football can have on you. But I suppose I've learned not to, during this particular period, not to get too excited in victory, nor too despondent in defeat, because our club's in a really good place at the minute, both on and off the pitch, as we've said a number of times. But of course, like any team or profession, there will be bumps along the road. But we have a board and a supporter base that are fully behind the job that our management team are doing, and we hope to be able to retain them, like they do with their own playing squad, for many years to come.
And I suppose, just to wrap up the podcast, it's something that we've asked both Andrew McKinley at Hearts and Alan Burrows last year at Maverwell. And I think Alan Burrows mentioned before, has talked about summer football, for instance. Andrew McKinley was talking about how Scottish football needs to talk up the game a bit more. But is there anything either of you would want to change about Scottish football?
I personally would agree with Andrew McKinley has when he said recently we need to talk up our game more in Scotland. Because I've spoken to a number of fans recently who've actually said to me that they actually prefer to watch the Scottish games on TV now in reference to others. So it's time we talk our game up, definitely.
I would agree with that. I don't think the Scottish game's in a bad place. I mean, of course, much has been said, much has been written about the difficulties that it's faced in recent months. But, you know, all clubs are part of a members' organisation and can only create positive change if it's deemed necessary, if we come together collectively and agree a way forward. So it will come as no surprise, however, that I would like to see clubs being given more recognition and responsibility in their communities. I mean, clubs and jackal arms of all size, the length and breadth of the country, it's shown. I mean, I think you had Jamie from Serious, we were just one of a number of clubs. They've shown the length and breadth of the company, the impact they can have on physical, social, and emotional needs of those facing difficult times. So I'd like to see national and local government reach out to clubs with a view to developing and delivering community projects at our stadiums. Because whether you love football or loathe football, there is no denying it's a powerful tool. And we have the ability to put it to good use in supporting or complementing the work of our public sector in changing lives and communities.
Yeah, John, Peter, couldn't agree more there. I do agree with you, Peter. I think the game is in a decent-ish spot, shall we say. And as you said as well, John, I definitely agree with Andrew that we can talk it up even more. And I think the work that you've both been doing, and everybody at Montrose and around the club and the community as well, has been superb, not just recently, but as we said already, over the last few years. And yeah, we just wanted to say thank you for coming on to chat to us, and we've really enjoyed learning a little bit more about it and hearing more.
No, thank you for having us. It's been a pleasure.
Thank you.
No problem at all. And yeah, thank you everybody at home for listening as well. And John, Peter, we'll let you get on with the rest of your day.
Great. Thank you.
Chris, we didn't get a chance last podcast to talk about our things we've seen for our sort of usual way to end the podcast. So I thought we'll try and squeeze a couple in now. Have you got anything you've seen recently, maybe over the course of the last month or so?
Yeah, I've got a couple. Obviously, it's been a while since we've done this, but I'll try and keep it relatively short. I don't think we've talked about this on the podcast yet, so I wanted to highlight it just in case anybody hadn't seen it. But that is Sports Pundit, and that they are at Sports Pundit HQ on Twitter, and it's actually a weekly newsletter that kind of highlights trends and puts some case studies together from across the sports industry, and it is put together by a chap called Andy Marston, who does kind of research and insights for a couple of kind of marketing and agencies and things like that. So it's actually super interesting. I've been subscribed to for about just over a month now, and yeah, weekly newsletter, as I said. And yeah, I think it's obviously one, well, I like to keep up to date with quite a lot. I've got quite a few subscriptions to newsletters, and yeah, I would definitely recommend that anybody else give that a subscribe and get that on a weekly basis as well. My other one was one that I think I actually spotted from that newsletter, and it's super interesting. So Front Office Sports, who I think we've mentioned a few times, maybe in the past actually, more than recently, they are kind of an American sports marketing kind of business of sport website, and they're absolutely huge. They seem to get really good kind of sponsorships and stuff like that. But they have put together something in conjunction with Pepsi, and that is a sports marketing essentials course. It is free. There's 8 lessons, and you can complete it at your own pace. And yeah, I signed up yesterday, had a quick look. Obviously, I mean, I'm not going to brag here, but I don't need the sports marketing essentials, but some people might need them. So yeah, I'd recommend to take a quick look at that, because it looks like it could be really interesting for some folk that want to get a bit more of a lowdown on what's happening in the industry.
No, I hadn't actually heard of the first example you gave, so I'll need to check that out. But yeah, I'd seen the Front Office Sport stuff that I thought looked quite interesting. I think just following on from that then, for I'm sure a number of people listening, we've probably seen some of the interviews that they've done, but Behind Sport, which go look at interviewing people that are involved within clubs and various other sort of sports from a media sort of point of view. And Grant Russell from Motherwell obviously featured recently on one. And he came, when he did our podcast, he spoke about athlete brand marketing, and he's done a sort of follow-up interview with them, which is probably worth checking out. It was an interesting reading, and just keeping up to speed on what's happening at Motherwell. And I've got a couple of other examples. One, I think everybody sort of saw the news, but the sort of Rangers and Celtic being featured in Fortnite, I thought was a fantastic opportunity for both clubs. I can imagine from the outside, and I can, might be completely wrong, but the money involved won't be massive for the clubs, but the branding and exposure and that opportunity for younger fans especially to be able to use sort of the club colours, etc., is a great opportunity. Sticking in Scotland, Aberdeen and their AberDNA, we've talked to Scott Gormall in the past about it, and it seems to just keep kicking on in terms of what they're doing and some of their fan engagement stuff. And I was quite interested to see that they're just about to, or they have just sort of closed the entries for a competition where two junior members, one boy, one girl, can win a squad number as part of the team and stuff like that, which I thought, look, it's a simple thing. It doesn't really cost them any money to create and do that, but that opportunity for a younger fan to say that they've got a squad number with Aberdeen is fantastic. And yeah, it's just another sort of example of how they've developed their, or what they do to help activate a lot of their sort of membership stuff. So yeah, I thought that was quite interesting. And two quick ones from a content point of view, European Tour talked about them, or I talk about them, should I say, a lot on this podcast. I thought their Angry Golfers content was really good, worth going to check out. And they also, when they were in Dubai, I think it was, or Abu Dhabi a couple of weeks ago, they mic'd up Justin Rose on the driving range practice ground. And again, just given that sort of unique content and insight, I know it's a lot harder to mic up coaches, etc., from a football point of view. But, you know, when you see it, is well, for me, I find it very fascinating content. And I know I'm not alone on that as well. So, yeah, that was my examples for this week.
Love it. I've got one final one that I just remembered that we probably should shout out, because it's, again, something, a bit of a resource almost, that could be really interesting. That was from the Online Rule. I know Scott really well, and he's put together, he's been working on it for quite a while actually, and he's got it for all of the English leagues down south, but also the Scottish Premiership up here. And that's just a Twitter table that kind of tracks how many followers the clubs have got, how that's changed over time, how many tweets they do, how many quote tweets they do, how many retweets they do, how much they post images. And I just think it's a super interesting resource to keep an eye on and see who's doing what in the Scottish Premiership and also beyond down south.
Yeah, definitely worth checking out.
Cheers for listening, everyone, and we'll see you again next time.